Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk Leadership podcast. So first of all, just thank you very much for allowing us to record this in your new lovely offices in Leeds City Centre. I understand that we're here to talk about revolutionisation of AI with the workplace, which I'm really excited to talk about. But before we get into that, if you could just both give us a bit of an introduction. Obviously, I know you both very well. I've known you for a number of years now, but it'd be great for our audience and listeners to just learn a little bit about your yourselves and tell us a bit about Rob Equity as well, please.
Okay, so I'm Steve Anderson. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer for Rob Equity. I've been doing consultancy for probably about 7 years and been working in various industries probably about 20 years.
Similar story, really. So Neil Dunlop, Tech Director for Rob Equity. Similar story to Steve, actually. Been doing this 20-something years. I don't want to specify the number because it's a long time. Always been a technologist. And been working in consultancy spaces about the same, really, 7-8 years. And the job is to make sure that we use the right tech in the right way and help our customers apply that to their business problems, really.
Fantastic, brilliant. And you've obviously both worked together previously.
Indeed. We have many,
in a while now.
Yeah, fair few businesses now, so we keep bumping into each other and
Cool, fantastic. And what do you, I think you both joined Rob Equity at separate times, I understand, didn't you? But what was it that what drew you to join the business, and what's, you know, where do you see the future there?
I mean, the big one is the potential for the company. Done lots of things in lots of different spaces, lots of different companies. Always tech for me personally, but the thing that stands out for me is just the way the company works, their ambition, their appetite, and the things they get done for customers. Got a really solid relationship with customers, and we solve a lot of problems in really creative ways. And I think it's that spirit and the ambition of the company that drew me in personally. You want to work with switched on people that are keen to push on and make a difference. And it's almost irresistible for me. You know, it's a great team, so it's worth being there.
Yeah, the timing's really good for it. So a bit about Rob Equity. So they've been going since 2016. We're about just over 150 staff, so we've doubled in the last year. So there's real rapid hypergrowth going on with the business. They're in pure play, the UK's leading pure play intelligent automation business. And what's great about them is that they've been doing this for a while, but actually what's coming in now and what we're talking about in the marketplace is everybody's talking about AI, intelligent automation, how to automate things, how we're going to augment people to work with artificial intelligence to get the best out of the jobs. One of our mission statements for us is for our businesses and staff to fulfill their core purpose. And that's really important right now when we see what's going on in health services, in a lot of places where people are inundated with data and the day job becomes surviving, trying to manage that data, manage a day job, but also actually come and do the job they actually wanted to do. So for a classic example, you imagine a nurse or a doctor swamped in paperwork, running around, and the last thing they want to be doing is, or imagine themselves doing, would be that versus being in front of caring for people, palliative care, giving the type of service they should be giving, and allowing the machines, which we can do now, to do all of that work behind them. And I think that's really exciting. That's exactly where we're at. So Rob Equity is in a really good space to help with that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's, I come from an industry that's quite heavily data focused and data driven, but the biggest frustration is that, you know, it's we're very client facing, customer facing, and that's where you want to focus your efforts and build your relationships. And it's frustrating when that data prevents you from doing that as effectively as you want to. But then it's like you say, you know, it's that time element, isn't it? But I think there's also quite a lot of, you know, AI and automation, their buzzwords have been talked about for however many years. I think there's quite often, and I think we come on to this later on as a question, is there's that kind of the reward, and how do businesses see the reward, like physically see the reward at the end of the implementation of those tools. And so it'd be really interesting to learn more about that. Before we go into my like first proper question, actually, you guys, so Robiquity, you said about 150, that's predominantly made up across London and Manchester and other areas outside of, because we're in Leeds today, yeah, we're in Leeds City Centre. Yeah. So I think it'd be nice to talk about that initially, because you've just kind of announced that you're in Leeds, officially. So we're in your nice new offices today, which I believe you've been in for just about a month and a half, couple of months nearly.
Yeah, a bit longer, but yeah.
What are the plans there then to kind of expand and grow?
So Robiquity is hiring staff, or has staff, all over the country, but also, so we've got, it's been Manchester founded, it's got its main offices in Manchester. We realised that there's a real great opportunity now with the size that we're becoming, is to create those hubs, and London and Leeds were the natural choice. Leeds is a fantastic space for us. Yep. We've worked out of Leeds for 2 decades.
Just moderately biased.
Yeah. It's, we understand how important the community is of Leeds as well. And it's nice, it just means that people have got somewhere close by that they can go to, whether we've got staff in London that can go to the London office and work together collaboratively, or meet with clients there. Same for us now in Leeds. Manchester's obviously got our hub and our biggest office. But Leeds for us now is a great opportunity to spread the gospel, as it were, as to what Robiquity is, what we do. What's quite nice is that we are very different to quite a lot of the other consultancy service places out there. What you're going to find is everyone's going to rebrand artificial intelligence on everything, but then when you scrape back the surface of that, is that how much experience have they got with that, and what is artificial intelligence, what genuinely are you going to apply that to in your business? So yeah.
Fantastic, exciting times. So first question to you, Neil, is how can companies implement AI and automation to better support their people, and you know, support their employees to improve overall business performance? And it'd be great if you could give us an example.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll get to some tech, but of course, there's the business objective, and we always try and focus on what's the business and people impact before we get to the tech. So you've got to understand the problem. So what we always say to customers is, you know, great, think big. You know, you want to do an AI thing, wonderful, start small. So you've got to have that big objective, big ambitious thing that you want to do, but you've got to figure out what are the first small steps you can take to start heading you towards AI. But the reality is you've probably got a bunch of foundational stuff around data, people and process that needs to be sorted out. The way we break this down, we sort of see 3 stages on a journey from having process automation, which is stage 1, all the way up to AI and a self-driving business is stage 3. So with stage 1, there's probably some really simple things you can do to automate tasks. And that's usually around, I want to work faster. I want to take repetitive things off human beings and make a digital worker do that work so the company can move faster. And they're usually fairly tactical things, they're fairly straightforward things you can do, but they lay the foundations for getting all your data in the right shape and getting your processes cleaned up and streamlined. So there's value in that. That first sort of no regrets decision is to automate some things and map your processes out, but always have that guiding North Star of where do you want to be? What kind of AI do you want to get to? So you need your business objective and take the first step. Stage 2 is more about joining those automated processes together. We call it intelligent automation. So you're joining things together, you're streamlining the decision making, you start to implement AI for getting data in, making those decisions and getting that data out. And it starts to streamline the end-to-end things. You start to realize more value across things like user journeys. So again, you map those things out, you join things together, you automate, you put AI in there. And that's, you know, it's giving your business a digital brain with some human oversight. So you're not letting the machines make all the decisions. They're making strong suggestions about where things should be routed, how things should be done, what quantity should be ordered. But there's a human saying yes or no to a lot of that stuff. So it gives you a safety net. And then really stage 3 is the self-driving business where AI really hits home. And that's really where those decisions are made by machines, made by AI, and the humans have confidence that they're making the right decisions. So unless there's an exception, humans tend not to intervene. Examples of this sort of stuff would be things like stock forecasting. How much stock do we need? How much did we sell last month, last year, in each location? Now, as you get to a self-driving business, AI is placing those orders for restock. So it's communicating with your suppliers and bringing all that stock through the supply chain. And there's just human oversight. So you don't need to raise purchase orders. You don't need to deal with the invoicing. It's predicting you're going to sell 300 units of this product, places the order for you, and it flows all the way through. Other examples, you know, it's brilliant. Yeah, and it does take a bit of bravery, and it takes a long time to get there to build all the foundations up. To go to Steve's example in healthcare, just the process of transcribing GP notes. We've all been to a GP, we've all had a consultation. You might be there for, well, hopefully an hour. It might be more like half an hour these days, you know, in and out quickly. But the GP will record that. It'll all be transcribed, and AI can pull out the key terms. Medical terms are quite complicated, but it can pick out those key terms, make a summary, and it could get sent to a medical secretary for review. But more and more, we're seeing GP practices that are saying, well, can you write me the patient letter, make an initial diagnosis, and recommend the next treatment steps? So it can automate that entire process, and it saves hours and hours and hours. There's always a human there to check it, but you know, it's a huge time saver in a medical practice. We see lots in retail around segmenting customers to figure out what kind of customer is this, what's the next best recommendation, what should we try and sell that customer, how can we deliver great service to them? So there's lots of different use cases of AI, and trying to pick a practical and pragmatic one to start with, and then building up from stage one automation all the way to a self-driving business is a plan you can make and do the first things on day one to realise value.
Fantastic. Interesting. It's so fascinating, isn't it, what these tools can do. However, there's lots of misconceptions out there, isn't there, and roadblockers and that can prevent people, organisations from seeing and feeling the kind of being able to visualise the rewards by using these tools and obviously your technology and your services. How do you overcome those with clients, and how, you know, I'm sure you've got lots of examples. Obviously you're expanding, you're growing, you're doing some, yeah. You know, you're doing it well, obviously, but it'd be great to understand and learn more about how you overcome those misconceptions and roadblocks.
So some of the classic ones are, so a finance director will look at the potential of putting in this type of technology, and they want a return on investment. And in the current marketplace now, as we've seen, especially in the UK economy, people are very cautious about where they're spending the money, and they want bang for buck. So we get that a lot. It's something of ubiquity. I was fascinated how much we overextend now into the business case angle of working with the client to present this business case to them about, if you spend money with us, what can you achieve? When's the return on investment? When will it pay for itself? And when will it profit in the future? And we can create models that actually support the financial director in doing that stuff. So there's a fear about when am I going to get my investment returned? And as Neil mentioned about automating, automating tasks is, there's thousands of hours of time that people spend on compiling and writing and doing the right thing when it comes to compliance, security, the ethical part of it. We can automate all of that. And by doing that, that's freeing up people. And what we've seen from the pandemic is that when times got tough and there was the beginnings of a lot of overinflated employed businesses, and then they realised that actually they started scaling back, and you've seen on the news the types of things where banks and everybody are reducing operating costs for this economy reason. Yeah. Automation can help massively with that. And it doesn't mean that there was always this fear as well, because one of the roadblockers was people are going to be out of work.
I was just about to say that. How do you overcome those fears? Sure. Because it's great saying, well, you know, we can free up, you know, we free up X number of, but does that mean that you don't need us? And
so the roadblocks we get, so you've got the return on investment, which we can work with. The other roadblockers can be this fear of the robots are coming, they're going to take over our jobs, you know. It's everyone's watched the sci-fi and everything like that. The reality is that way beyond us worrying about that, there's an augmented world where the things that you can do with automation, with your staff, and the ability to grow as a business and give them the chance to do the empathetic things and the creative things rather than the mundane tasks is huge. And it's a change experience that, much like change transformation when business transformation was a big deal, mm-hmm. and that went on for quite a few years, didn't it? Everyone was talking business transformation. And actually, what it is it's just, it's natural change. Everyone's got to keep changing. You've all read the Who Moved My Cheese. Yeah. And so this augmented capabilities between automation and human beings is something that we can really get behind together, but it involves a conversation. And one thing we've found is that, again, starting small, doing something and getting the teams that have experienced it to turn around to their colleagues and say, we've experienced it, we've done something, it's worked really well, it's helped us, and I'm more fulfilled in my job, then you're spreading the word across the other teams that it's not a scary thing, and it is something that's, it has lots of benefits from. But again, from a leadership perspective, it's really important that they set that tone from day one.
I think I could give a really great example. You know, you said your business, you really need to be on the phone talking to people. It's a human-led business. An awful lot of businesses are actually human-led. That's where the difference is how good are your staff with your customers? That's what's going to get you the sale. That's what's going to win you the deal. That's what's going to differentiate you. And we've worked with a very big company in their call center, basically to free up a lot of the process-based things and a lot of the admin-based things to get people time so that they can spend that with customers. And you often start these conversations with people thinking about return on investment, and particularly in a call center, what's my call handling time? And there was a huge drive to drive this number down, make those calls as short as possible so we can do more.
I absolutely agree with you on that, basically, and those are the things that then impact and affect quality, because you've got the processes to follow and the data to keep on top of and the numbers to hit, mm. and therefore, like you said, your call times are shorter, and you know, and that's when it really impacts quality.
And that particular client actually switched and said, no, I want my humans to spend as long as it takes on the call with the customer until that customer's happy. Don't care about call handling time, I care about customer satisfaction. The only way I can devote enough time to each call is by automating and using AI so people can self-serve or all of the admin goes away. And their customer satisfaction went through the roof because they had time to be human about it.
I think that's the biggest part of, if you cut a corner, we've seen it where if you put robotic voicing in to the front of the customer, they're just going to get annoyed, yeah. especially when they articulate something that you think you're being quick as a business and the customer just says something and they go, I don't understand you. The yeah. frustration. Whereas if you put the human being in, but it's a short period of time, and then the rest of it is actually sorted out, the customer's happy because they feel like they've talked to a human. The human's pressed a button and all of those things it needed to do when it was, in the old days, would tab across 10 different windows to try and solve a problem. Yeah. It can get those bits done quickly, and then you can serve the customer on. Yeah. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So moving on to, we've just touched on it a little bit, culture and the impact of AI as a leader, and how you navigate, what's the kind of like future of navigating the impact with people and culture. I'm sure you've come up against it, and obviously we've touched on it a little bit just now with clients, existing clients, potential clients in the future. What kind of key areas do you think?
I think there's a couple of things to be wary of and be cognizant of as a leader, particularly now. You know, AI is everywhere. The hype is huge. AI is going to do everything. And we've probably all got ChatGPT or Gemini or something on our Copilot on our desktop. And I'll be honest, we've probably all had a tinker. And we all probably use it quite a lot for copywriting and summarization and data analysis or whatever, you know, and we all quietly fess up and go, ChatGPT wrote that for me. I think there's a danger that we over rely on AI to do things. We have to remember that we want to be a human-led business, and we use the machines to free our time up. And if we use too much AI, you get kind of this AI corporate vanilla. Everything sounds the same. You sound like everybody else. It's like, look at the quantity, never mind the quantity, so the quality. So, you know, you've kind of got to pick and choose your battles and use AI appropriately. It's not one size fits all. It's not suitable for every situation. It's got to be driven and led by humans. You've got to use AI in the right spaces, for me. To do that well, you've kind of got to be aware of the art of the possible. What does AI do? What's it useful for? And I think everybody thinks large language models, chatbots, you know, that's what everybody envisages when they think AI. But there's lots of AI and underlying machine learning that does lots of clever things. So I think leaders need to be more informed. And we spend a long time kind of demystifying stuff. A lot of the conversations we have is, I want AI, but I don't really know what it's for. And I don't know, once I figure out what it's for, I don't know how to do it. So yeah, Steve and I spend a long time having conversations with business leaders about, here's what's possible, here's what's practical and pragmatic, and here's the kind of impact it's going to have on your business. And I think that's the last one, is you kind of need to get to be pragmatic. It's like, we can dream big, but we've got to take practical steps at the start and really think about what's the business objective and what are the metrics that I want to change and how will I apply AI to move those. Otherwise, they're just pet projects and they become fanciful and they become a massive waste of money. So doing that thinking of what's the business metric or process that you want to change or improve and what's the simplest things I can do first to start changing that thing. And AI will do that. It'll be part of that story. But there's a bunch of other stuff to do as well. So, yeah, again, it's kind of dream big but start small, really.
Yeah, I think smart leaders are the ones that will be able to articulate to the staff what aspects of AI are going to be part of the business and why. Yeah. And by doing that, they can encourage a two-way conversation because, as Neil mentioned, everyone's at home or trying out the jobs using AI. Leaders need to understand who's doing that and why, and whether it's having a positive or negative effect on the business. There'll be a thing where there's ethical AI, which is a huge part, which is for every business, there'll be, I'm sure there'll be government acts that come out around ethical AI, which will explain what aspects of your business are using AI and for what, to make sure that it's fair. But there's loads of benefits that will come out of that in terms of the speed at which people will be able to do things. But I think the leaders need to explain what the roadmap is, because I would imagine that, depending on the size, certainly from large FTSEs and what have you, their shareholders will be saying, what's your AI agenda? Yeah. Again, it's abused the same way, I suppose, that business transformation was. Yeah. There was a huge revolution when it became what we worked through, which was on-prem to cloud, and everyone had to move on to the cloud quickly because of all the benefits of that. AI is flooding all business strategies right now, and we're getting those conversations and we're having clients reach out to us to say, I've been asked to look at AI within our business, but I don't know where to start. And I think that's a nice way that we can help in that, is either we can come in and help them start where they've no idea where to go, or they've got an inkling as to where to go, but they don't know which bit will have the best impact or an impact that they can share with their employees. So we can help just sort of steadily shape them on the right direction without doing it in the wrong way. And as I said, the big part of that is the human aspect, is taking people along with it, the show and tells, the demos, saying that it's a good thing. Journey, you've got to take them on the journey of that. And I think that'll promote a more exciting view as to where it's going, as opposed to this fear that certain people in certain spaces are terrified about AI, especially when they say that the machines will take out all the thinking process of what we do reactively, and then humans will have to think proactively about the things they're doing creatively. Some people just aren't naturally creative, and so that will scare them, because they'll be expected that the jobs that they used to enjoy doing, that took the majority of the week to do, that they did really well, but it took them a week to do it, if that's being done in seconds, then what are they going to do? And I think that's, you know, a good leader will look at the retraining and the re-education of what those people could do, and have give them time to move into that.
Human-led, isn't it? Your staff have got to be informed and enabled and empowered to use AI. And I think that's the perspective you have to take, is that AI is here to support our staff, not to replace them. Absolutely. We can all raise the bar. We can all be better if we use AI, but it's humans leading the charge.
There's an opportunity there for learning and development and growth in people. And that's, they're the things that naturally get pushed to the bottom of the priority list because it's, you know, it's the time element, isn't it? So I think there's lots of opportunities for businesses and leaders to be able to provide their people with more time to learn, develop and grow.
It would, and it would be a shame to be hiring in people that do know AI and not thinking about the people that are already there that need to learn more about AI and giving them time to do that when they're trying to do a day job while someone else comes in, and that would be unfair. So a good leader will mix the two together.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any books, tools, sources? I mean, obviously there's all sorts online, isn't there? But anything specifically that you guys would recommend to the listeners and viewers to read about? Because obviously AI and automation, they've become such buzzwords, and, you know, so many businesses just don't know where to start, and they're like, well, everyone else is doing it, we need AI, we need to use like automation. And I think, you know, it's offering sort of education to...
You always ask me this, and I haven't been prepared for this one.
I chucked that one in there.
I'm convinced the books are still being written, and they're going out of date as soon as they're being done. So dynamic content is definitely...
There's a lot of glossing over the top, isn't there, where they go, here's 50 use cases for AI, and you kind of go, okay, yeah, but how does it actually work? We're finding simpler applications of AI are gaining much more traction. So people are getting away from the breathless stuff and they're coming back to, how do I improve that business process? We consume 1,000 written forms every day. I need to get them through a processing system really quickly. Can I use intelligent document processing? Rather than a grandiose thing, they're picking off things like transcription, intelligent document processing, forecasting. You know, they're picking particular functions within the business to look at, rather than AI will do everything for me, they're kind of assembling the best building blocks. Yeah, and it is about that end-to-end process.
We're trying to get the mix of, that's the thing, is that automate an existing process, but if the existing process is subpar to what it could be, we'd rather look at that process, redesign it, and then move on to automating it, so that you're not then speeding up bad ways of working. Yeah. So
there is one book, and it's good for perspective. It's called Scary Smart, and it'll make you think, and it might make you want to unsubscribe from a few things and turn your phone off now and again. And it does kind of emphasise that ethics piece, and I think it's basically sort of saying AI is learning and growing every day, but at the moment it's like training a toddler on. Adult magazines and the worst of humanity. You know, we're kind of wiring it into the internet and we're saying, learn from here. The internet's not a great example of humanity. So, and you know, it just learns all the biases that are out there on the internet, and that's not representative of society. So that dry ethics piece that makes you think, oh, well, we need to be careful about how we apply this. And we were at a conference recently, weren't we, where, you know, there's that balance between if we open source AI and make it fair and accessible to everybody, that means everybody, and some people have very poor intentions for the world. So then do we control it? And if we control it, but then it's not fair and it's not accessible, and some people are haves and some people are have-nots. So the ethics debate is a really challenging one for the future, I think.
Like most open source information, I think you can get overwhelmed with what's going on, because you can go to the Silicon Valley aspect of what they've found or what they're not telling us to what actually works. And I think it's important. I think it's good to have a wide view of it. We're all a bit tech geeky when it comes to learning about how far it's going in OpenAI. But when it comes down to what job do I do and how do I think AI could help solve that problem, that's the real thing. And I think if you want to be proactive in your business and work towards making really strong changes, actually just look at what you actually do in your job. And then be bold enough to say, what could AI do that could either automate the tasks that I don't want to do anymore, or allow me to accelerate and do more than I did before? You know, someone compiling a report in finance or merchandising that takes a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, ready. If you can automate things like that, or even put them into real time via Microsoft products and what have you, you're then being proactively, you're looking real time at exactly what's going on in your business.
It's a huge leveler.
The difference is that at the end of the month, you're pressing an export and you're creating that report that would have taken you however long to build. And the problem is you've seen the data, that's just now in the past. Whereas if every day you can look at real time information, you can actually act on it and course correct if you need to.
Yeah, fantastic, brilliant. So we've got time for one last question, more about the future, and obviously with AI, we've been talking about it for I don't know how many years now. So like you say, it's ever changing, ever evolving. So I'm not sure how clear you can be with this question, but we'll go for it anyway. How do you think the future is going to look within workplaces in this obviously ever changing world of AI and automation? And that's open to both of you. Feel free to give me a.
Do you want to start? Steve thinks big. He always thinks he's a bit of a futurist.
I start thinking about smart buildings, and so there's AI aspects of air conditioning to lighting to getting your costs down. Something we've talked about around people that have a lot of office space, yeah, and then all of a sudden they're not there, is that having smart AI that will actually reduce as much of that operating cost as possible. So those are some simple infrastructural type things. But in terms of the workplace, I think there's just going to be this, as the seed has now been planted around what automation AI can do for departments and for businesses and how it serves customers, I think the ball's just going to keep rolling, yeah, on that, where
it's really hard to predict.
I think what would happen is you'll have usual existing large businesses that will want to hoover up all of that excessive processing and get it as tight as possible and as lean as possible and save and make as much money as possible. And they'll be in competition with what we've seen before, which is the new businesses, the small and medium-sized businesses that will be starting with automation and AI. And because of that, they won't have all of that legacy stuff to sort out. Yeah. So they'll start with small teams. They'll be able to do a lot more with less. Their outputs and their customer service and their ability to...
It's going to be a huge leveler. Yeah. So all of the benefits of scale of having a long-lasting business where you've got experience in your workforce, or you've got huge budgets to have dedicated departments to do research or to really dig into detail, anything where, you know, length of service or length of existence and experience in your business and efficiencies of scale, they're kind of blown away, because AI can summarize things really quickly. It can help you with research. It can help you get to the salient points really quickly. You don't need huge teams to run your back office processes. So you can start a new business and almost be on a par with an existing business almost overnight with none of that baggage. So the disruption's going to be huge, which is why existing businesses are really...
I need some AI in my life.
You do, but it's information at your fingertips, right? How many, you know... I can talk to my car, and this morning I was looking for a parking space, and I can say, find me a parking space nearby, and it could tell me how many cars were in each car park, and it could reroute me dynamically. Great, you know, and the phone in your pocket is going to have more and more information, you know, and you can work from anywhere. So it just makes life more convenient, more accessible. It skills you up, it gives you a boatload of knowledge. And if someone is going to apply that to the different business niches and assemble all the right bits, how quickly can you move? You know, that'll be the difference of how quickly can you move, not how long have you existed.
Yeah, obviously the image and speech aspects are huge. From a call centre, customer service, etc., we talk about the creativity of humans and the empathy that they've got. Well, we're feeding all of that in. So the microtells that come into imaging from a person to a person, and then the responsiveness that AI will be able to provide when talking to an irate customer and quelling them, all that's going to be learnt. So you want to get into years down the line, is they will be able to do that, you know, and everyone's going to keep challenging it. I've seen it in the we've been chatting with legal tech, and that's a hot topic around. We've seen this before around, if you, there was a time when graduates would have a five-step process towards learning an art of a profession and then deservingly going into middle management, senior management, etc. Yeah. That step's been taken away by AI.
All that time served and experience garnered doesn't matter.
So the question mark starts to become, how do I get over those steps? Because they are saying, well, AI will do the small jobs, and if the seniority will pay a dividend as a human doing the bigger jobs. Mm-hmm. But for our children and our generations to come, is the question for them is, they won't be able to do that, because that will be gone, because those steps will be missing. But these are the things that are coming through around. You've seen the mapping of faces and... and the way it'll interact, is that it's just going to go on. And I think you get past the automation and those aspects, which will be fairly trivial. However many years down the line, you talk about the neural implanting, the fit, you know, the recognition, the glasses that have the subtitling and the earpieces that do the language translations. We're entering into a new digital age. And I can't remember who the chap was who mentioned that for the first time in human history, humans aren't writing the future, they're writing it with machinery. Because the machinery is so creative in what it outputs that humans actually, some of the things that you see if you write into digital imagery and it outputs ideas about buses and housing and structural ways of working, for the first time ever, we're getting ideas from artificial intelligence and then acting on it.
I wouldn't go quite as far as Steve. As I say, he's the futurist. I still think that the human skills of empathy, emotion and creativity, if humans can harness AI and all of the donkey work that it does, and they can think of new ways to put all these capabilities together, I think it's going to be really empowering. And I think that the differentiator will be those human facets of, you know, I'm talking to somebody who's just been bereaved. It requires skill and diplomacy and emotion to get this right. And humans do that better than anything else at the moment. And I think that's going to last a bit longer than Steve thinks. And I think that creativity. So while AI is quite good at regurgitating things and reusing things, and we've just seen sort of AI generated video, it's really cool, but I still think that human spark is going to be the differentiator. So learning how to use all this AI to best effect will be the people and the companies that get ahead.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much to both of you, Steve and Neil. I've really enjoyed the session. It's been really interesting, really, really informative, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers will all agree as well. If anyone wants to reach out to you, I'm sure once we release this podcast, I'm sure people will have questions and want to reach out to you and want to learn and understand more about what you guys, the great work that you guys are doing here for building AI into the future. It's the best way to contact you via LinkedIn profiles, you think? Yeah.
We're not hard to find.
Yeah. No.
Love a chat, love a debate.
Fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you both very much, and thanks for having us at your offices as well.
You're welcome. Thanks for seeing you.
No worries. Thank you.